1 month ago, Puria system, Borlias occupation, day 1. A god cannot die, Charat Kral said. Therefore it can have no fear of death. So who is braver, a god or a mortal? Charat Kral was a pilot of the Yuzhong Vong, humanoid, a little over 2 meters in height. His skin, where it was not covered by geometric tattoos, was pale, marked everywhere by the white, slightly reflective lines of old scars. Some years ago mishap had eaten away the center of his face, eliminating even the diminutive nose common to the Yuzhong Vong, leaving behind brown-crusted cartilage and horizontal holes into his sinus passages. His forehead angled back less dramatically than many of the Yuzhong Vong, and looked a trifle more like the forehead of a human, for which 2 warriors had taunted him, for which he had killed them. He disguised the trait as much as he could by yanking out the last of the hair on his head and adding skulltop tattoos that drew the eye up and back, away from the offending forehead. One day he would earn an implant that would further mask his deformity and end his problem. He wore an Uglith cloaker, the transparent environment suit of Yuzhong Vong pilots, over a simple warrior's loincloth. Both garments were living creatures, engineered and bred to perform only the tasks demanded of them, to aid the Yuzhong Vong in their pursuit of glory. He sat in the cockpit of his coral skipper, the irregular, rock-like space fighter of his kind, but he did not wear his cognition hood at the moment. The mask-like creature that kept him in mental contact with his craft, that allowed him to sense with its senses and pilot it with the agility of thought rather than muscle and reaction, was set to the side while his coral skipper cruised on routine patrol. He and his mission partner, Penzat Kral, were in distant orbit above the world Borlias. The planet had been recently seized from the infidels native to this galaxy, so that it could be used as a staging area for the Yuzhong Vong assault on the galactic throne world of Coruscant. Borlias was an agreeably green world, not overgrown with the dead, crusty dwellings of the infidels, not strewn with their unnatural implements of technology. Only a military base, now smashed, had affronted the Yuzhong Vong with evidence of infidel occupation. The voice of Penzat Kral emerged from the small head-shaped villip mounted on the cockpit wall just beneath the canopy. Though most coral skippers were not equipped with villips, relying instead on the telepathic signals of Yamask war coordinators for all their communications, long-distance patrol craft did call for a means for direct communications. Don't be an idiot. If a god is the god of bravery, then by definition he must be braver than any Yuzhong Vong, than anything living. I wonder. Let us say, then, that you could become immortal as the gods and never die, but remain one of the Yuzhong Vong. You would never face death. Could you then be as brave as the Yuzhong Vong? You could kill forever, but never truly risk death, defy death, choose your time and place of death. Which is better, to be brave for a lifetime, or to kill forever? Who cares? The choice is not ours. But if I were to choose, I think I would choose immortality. Live long enough, and you might learn how to be brave as the Yuzhong Vong again. Kill long enough, and you could perhaps learn to kill a star. Charat Kral sobered. I have heard. What? That the infidels did that. Learned to kill a star. He heard Penzat Kral hiss in irritation. In the villip he saw his partner's lopsided features go even more off-center, as his mouth pulled down in an expression of contempt. So what if they did? They killed it the wrong way, with their wrong minds and their wrong devices. And, like idiots, they must have lost the secret, or they'd be destroying the worldships one by one. I have also heard, Charat Kral lowered his voice, a foolish instinct, since no one but Penzack Crawl could be listening to him. That gods may smile upon them, too, on the infidels. Ridiculous! Can you know the minds of the gods? I can no more know the minds of the gods than summon one of the enemy battleships to destroy for my personal glory. In the distance, away from Borlios, many kilometers from them, an enemy battleship winked into existence. Its bow pointed toward them. The ship was already up to speed. It grew rapidly as it neared them, as it approached Borlios. Penzack, you fool! My words did not summon it, you idiot! The Philip's face blurred and adjusted, reflecting a change in Penzack's features. Penzack had pulled on his cognition hood. Charat did likewise. His surroundings, the cockpit interior, seemed to become transparent, giving him a view in all directions through the senses of the coral skipper, showing him in breathtaking detail the onrushing enemy ship. No, now it was ships. More and more of the loathsome things of metal were dropping out of hyperspace, all aimed at Borlios, at Charat and Penzack. A moment later, Charat could feel a buzz through the cognition hood, a telltale sign that Penzack was sending a warning to the domain crawl commander on Borlios. The foremost New Republic ship, a sharply angled triangle in white, passed over the two coral skippers, blotting out the sun, casting them into shadow. Nowhere near so large as the Yuuzhan Vong world ship, it was still of impressive size, and so near that Charat felt he could reach out and drag his finger along its hull as it passed. Penzack Crawl sent his coral skipper into a dive, and turned to match the larger craft's course. Charat paced him. Above, he saw thruster gouts from the ship's belly herald the launching of the hated infidel starfighters. "How do we hurt them worst?" Charat asked. "Follow me in," Penzack said. "While they're launching, don't engage the fighters. Bait them so they follow us. The ship won't fire on us with the fighters in close proximity. We'll enter their launching bays and destroy the facilities there, then gut the ship from within." He looped around, rising and angling in toward the ship's belly. Charat followed. Mon Mothma, one of the newest cruisers in the New Republic fleet, a star destroyer refitted with gravity well generators capable of interfering with the short jumps made by Yuuzhan Vong craft, cruised straight toward Borlios from the point where it had dropped out of hyperspace. This hadn't been a timed drop. They'd plotted a course straight for the planet Borlios, and the planet's gravity well had dragged them into real space when they'd come close enough. And now before them was the blue-green world they had come to recapture. "No sign of a Yuuzhan Vong world ship in orbit," reported the sensor officer, a moon calamari male with deep blue skin. "The two coral skippers are turning to engage." General Wedge Antilles, a lean man with a careworn face and military posture, commander of the fleet group for which Mon Mothma was the flagship, nodded. "Gunnery, stay on them. Vape them if they come against us. Fighter control, continue launching starfighter squadrons."
"Yes, sir. Yes, sir."
Data screens lit up with colored blips as New Republic starfighters, X-Wings, A-9s, B-wings, E-wings, and more, streamed out of the docking bays and turned toward the planet. Wedge, standing at the captain's station toward the rear of the spacious bridge, ignored the screens. He concentrated instead on the live view of Borlios, which filled the main viewport at the bow end of the bridge. "I hope the Vong here have come to love this world," he told himself, "because I'm going to take it from them. They're going to learn what it is to lose the things they love." Luke Skywalker hit his thrusters. His X-Wing roared out of the main docking bay, losing altitude relative to the Mon Mothma. Behind him, 11 pilots of Twin Sun Squadron, the temporary X-Wing squad that was his command, formed up on him.
Twin sons away,
he said. Twin sons copy. That would be the controller on Mon Mothma's bridge. Be advised, two coral skippers are maneuvering into your flight path. Luke glanced at his sensor board. Two red blips were indeed turning from below to head toward them.
Squadron, follow me out. Let's give these two the gauntlet treatment.
He heard a chorus of acknowledgments. There was tension in some of the voices, but not alarm. All his pilots were veterans, survivors of the Sabres, the Shocks, and other squadrons that had been reduced to shield trios, wing pairs, and solo pilots during the Yuuzhan Vong attack on Coruscant mere days earlier. Two of them, forming with him a shield trio, were his wife, Mara Jade Skywalker, and the Corellian security officer turned pilot turned Jedi named Corin Horn. All his pilots were disciplined and competent. Many wanted revenge. Luke understood how they felt. The Vong, aided by their human agent Vicky Shesh, had almost managed to kidnap his and Mara's infant son, Ben, just days ago. They had killed his nephew, Anakin, and his nephew, Jason, was missing. The losses, especially that of his apprentice, Anakin, created an ache within him that he could not soothe. In his youth, Luke would have been anxious for payback, but today he set that portion of himself aside. That was dark side thinking, immature thinking. It had been a long time since he had been a smooth-faced innocent. The scars of combat and lines of age had accumulated on his face, matching the weight of experience and calm that had accumulated on his spirit. He extended his perceptions and sought Mara with them. He found her and almost flinched away from the contact. She was now an icy presence, concentrated totally on their mission. He shrugged. Iciness was better than one alternative. Mara, despite her cool and controlled manner, was as anguished as he by the near loss of Ben and the loss of their nephews, and it would be no surprise to find her lit like a lightsaber with a desire for revenge. The fact that she wasn't meant that she was in control. S-foils to attack position, Luke said, and suited action to words by flipping the switch that split the X-wing's flight surfaces into their familiar X-shaped attack profile. First and third trios take the leader, the rest on the wingmate. Fire at will. He linked his lasers to quad fire so that all four would fire with a single press of the trigger, and opened up on the lead coral skipper. Four red streams of destructive laser energy lanced out against the coral skipper. No, it was eight streams. Luke's burst, aimed at the starboard side of the ship, never reached its target. A blackness appeared before it, distorting space around it like a gigantic magnifying lens, drawing the laser fire into it. Those four red lances of energy simply bent and disappeared. But Mara's burst, aimed at the port side, hit the coral skipper an instant after Luke's vanished. He grinned. She must have been using her own force abilities to monitor him as well. She couldn't have timed it so expertly otherwise. Her lasers raked across the enemy starfighter's hull until the distortion flicked over to interpose itself. Then Luke fired again, chipping away at the coral skipper's stern. His blasts were joined by Corin's. The coral-like material of the skip's hull superheated, and the lasers tore red-hot gouges along the surface. Luke sent his X-wing into evasive maneuvers, moving back and forth, up and down, with the randomness of a flying insect. He saw his target's counterattack, a glowing missile from the coral skipper's plasma cannon, flash by to port, far enough away to be no danger to himself, Mara, or Corin. In fact, there were no cries of alarm from his squad mates, no sudden and tragic disappearances of New Republic blips from his sensors. They're not engaging. That was Twin Sons 11, a Kaminoian woman named Tilath Kir. Turning to pursue, Luke saw the blips of Twin Sons 4 through 6 and 10 through 12 turning back, following the coral skippers straight in toward Mon Mothma. Luke felt a little tingle.
But whether a warning from the Force or from his own years of combat experience, he could not tell. "Negative, break off," he said. "Do not engage. Twin Sons, turn to original course and form up on record time. Mon Mothma, these skips are yours."
"Copy, Twins One."
Luke turned back toward Borlias, saw his pilots breaking off from pursuit of the coral skippers and maneuvering to form up with the squadron. The moment his fighters were clear of the coral skippers, Mon Mothma's laser cannons opened up. One of the coral skippers was destroyed instantly, its Dovin Basal unable to absorb all the incoming damage with its void. The craft was reduced in a flash to glowing molten particles no larger than a fingernail. The other, apparently more skillful at soaking up damage with its void, still sustained a grazing impact and spun away from Mon Mothma out of control. No danger to the Star Destroyer. Luke shook his head at the Yuuzhan Vong's pointless sacrifice, at the sad waste of life, and formed his fighters up in an assault wedge in front of Record Time. Record Time was an armed troop transport. At nearly 170 meters, with two bulbous main portions, the larger stern housed the bridge and personnel bays, the smaller stern the engines. Connected by a narrow access tube, the vessel looked impossibly vulnerable, impossibly fragile. But its captain owner, a private trader, a smuggler, Luke believed, had volunteered its use to General Antilles during the fall of Coruscant, claiming it was the fastest, toughest vessel of its type. Now its bay was clear of trade goods and was filled with soldiers instead. Luke's comm unit hissed with a moment of static, then a woman's voice, "Record Time to Twin Sons leader, all set."
"Twin Sons to Record Time, you set the pace. We won't have any trouble staying where we need to be."
The transport surged forward, not fast by starfighter standards, but quickly enough for a freighter. Luke calculated its rate of acceleration and brought his X-wing up in front of the freighter's bridge. Mara and Corrin settled in with him. Another shield trio dropped back to the port side of Record Time, a third to the starboard side, and the last astern of the transport. All around Twin Sun Squadron, starfighter squadrons, frigates, destroyers, transports, and shuttles began accelerating to battle speed. Luke heard Colonel Gavin Darklighter's voice over the operation channel. "Rogue Squadron to Borlias. We're back. We kicked your butt 20 years ago. Now we're here to do it again." Luke grinned. Squadrons of coral skippers were already climbing to their altitude by the time Twin Sun Squadron began its descent into atmosphere. Slightly longer than X-wings and comparable spacecraft, the coral skippers were far more massive. They were dense constructions of Yorick coral, tapering toward the bow, broadening and deepening toward the stern, with rough exteriors reflecting their organic origins. They could be quite beautiful, Luke had decided. The ones rising against them, and the two they'd seen after leaving the Mon Mothma, shared a color scheme. A pastel red and a pearlescent silver swirled together in a mottled pattern. At the bow, tucked into a sort of niche grown into the coral surface, was the round reddish shape of the Dovin Basal, the creature whose gravitic powers dragged the coral skipper from point to point in space, and also brought up defensive voids that drank in damage like a Tatooine bantha drank water. On the top surface, just ahead of the point where the ship's body swelled to its greatest width, was the canopy over the cockpit. This one was tinted blue. Their beauty was irrelevant. As soon as they came within range, they opened up with their plasma cannons, life forms that spewed superheated materials that could eat through a starfighter's hull. "Break and engage. Cover the transport," Luke commanded, and suited action to words. He spun out in a rapid descent relative to the planet below and opened fire, trusting his wingmates to stay with him, to fire out of phase with him and at different portions of his target to overload and baffle the Dovin Basal. This time, the creature defending his target skip intercepted Mara's shot, fired from slightly below the skip center line, but couldn't whip the void around fast enough to counter Luke's and Corrin's shots,
which scoured the Yorick coral all around the pilot's canopy. Superheated blobs from his target's wingmate flashed toward Luke's X-wing. Luke heard a squeal of alarm from R2-D2, who was tucked into the astromech bay behind his canopy, but ignored it as an irrelevant detail. He continued his rolling descent, varying the speed of his roll and distance covered each half a standard second, and saw the plasma flash between his snub fighter and Mara's. Then the three of them were well below their targets and rising again behind the coral skipper's sterns. The skip's void swung around, hovering at the sterns, ready to soak up infinite amounts of weapon energy. The first engagements between coral skippers and New Republic starfighters had been terrible for the New Republic. Even seasoned pilots had been thrown off balance by the skip's incredible durability, by the failure of proton torpedoes and laser blasts sucked into the voids to do any harm to the vehicles, by the tenacity of the damage done by plasma cannons, which kept on eating away at vehicle surfaces well after they'd hit. Now things were different. The surviving pilots had adjusted their tactics and passed their information along to their fellows. The rules of the game were to overload the Dovin basals, striking them from several directions at once to ensure that some damage got through to hit the coral skipper surfaces. Starfighter pilots had to avoid taking any hits at all from skip weaponry. Any hit could eat through shields and prove fatal. And there were new tactics all the time, in every battle. Mara surged ahead of Luke and Corrin, flying in a pattern that was oddly predictable, and drew fire from both coral skippers. She became suddenly erratic in her flight, as random as only force skills could make a pilot, and flashed ahead until she was just behind the skips. She sideslipped to port, and as both streams of plasma cannon fire followed her, the fire from the starboard skip crossed the body of the port side skip. Two balls of fire thudded into the skip's belly before the starboard pilot compensated. The port skip's void whipped around to shield the skip's belly. In that instant, Mara drop-fired a quad-linked burst of laser fire. The skip detonated, hiding Mara's X-wing from sight for a moment, and Luke fired a laser stutter burst at the starboard skip's underside. He hoped that the pilot's confusion at having hurt his own wingmate, along with the Dovin Basil's effort to shield this skip from the damage from Mara's attack, would leave it momentarily vulnerable. He was right. His lasers hit the skip's underside and chewed through. That skip vectored away, trailing fluids that instantly froze at this near-vacuum altitude. He checked his sensors, two skips down. Mara was coming around to rejoin him and Corrin. Diagnostics said his X-wing was undamaged. Farther out, two of his twin sons' snub fighters were gone. The pilot of one of them was extravehicular. Luke hoped that the flight suit would keep the pilot alive until a rescue shuttle could arrive. "Good tactics, Mara," he said. "You always know the sweet thing to say." Luke grinned and came around toward a new set of opponents. Starfighter squadrons held the Yuuzhan Vong response to 3 points of conflict in orbit. The Twin Suns group took advantage of the opportunity and roared down through the atmosphere in an undefended zone, then banked toward the coral skipper's launch point, which had been detected on gravitic sensors. It was, not coincidentally, the same map coordinate as Borlias's New Republic military base. Luke didn't relish seeing what had become of the base during the Yuuzhan Vong occupation. As they dropped low over the jungle canopy, Luke could make out the target zone ahead. It didn't have the same profile as the holocube he'd studied. The main building seemed to be lower, broader. Small chips of Yorick coral were rising above it, angling toward them. His sensors said there were six of them. "Twin Suns up front," Luke said. "Engage all those skips. Record time, it's your call whether you want to hang back with us or move on to the target without us." "Twin Suns 1, this is record time. We're here to fight. We'll see you at the landing zone."
"Copy."
Lando Calrissian, in record time's troop bay, stood next to the ramp access and tried not to look concerned. He was sweating. He didn't like sweating. It suggested hard work, something he wasn't fond of, and just didn't give the impression of someone who was infinitely cool, infinitely in control. He looked over the units of men and women in the bay. Most were seated in rows of high-backed troop couches, strapped in against the turbulence that was likely to come. Their commanders walked up and down those rows, issuing last-minute instructions, advice, encouragements, jokes, insults. He looked over his own troops. They stood in a circle, each with a hand on the metal post at the circle's center, and stared at him. They were impassive, fearless. "Ready?" he asked. In unison, they answered, "Ready, sir." He knew that once they left the bay, he'd never see some of them again. Unlike the other commanders present, he was content with that knowledge. His troops would serve their purpose. The bay shuddered as enemy fire finally began to strike record time. Lando saw fear, even nausea, on the faces of some of the other troops. Not his. They continued to stare at him, waiting. Luke, with Mara and Corrin tucked in beside him, roared along in record time's wake. He grimaced. He had lost his top starboard laser cannon and engine to plasma fire. His power, maneuverability, and fighting strength were reduced. Ahead, record time was settling down into the jungle canopy, or perhaps into the open field just before the base. From here, it looked the same. Little flashes of light were pouring up from the ground and hammering into the transport's hull, blackening it. Though he was situated directly astern of the transport, Luke thought he could see the edges of record time's bow distorting as combat damage ate away at it. Then the transport turned to port, and Luke saw that he was right. The bow had sustained terrific damage from plasma cannons. He'd be astonished if the transport was spaceworthy now. After the last lurch and vibration, Lando knew the transport was down. He could barely hear over the system's alarms. He took a last deep breath and nodded at his troops, then slapped the button on the hull panel beside him. The top portion of the entry slid instantly up out of sight. The bottom portion lowered, becoming a ramp. Warm, humid air flooded into the troop bay. Beyond the entryway was field, its stringy grasses calf high, and beyond that was some sort of reddish Yuuzhan Vong construction, a large cylindrical building with arms radiating outward at regular intervals. "Go, go, go!" Lando shouted, and his troops released the bar they'd been holding. Shouting an inarticulate battle cry, they surged for the ramp, readying blaster rifles. As they reached the top of the ramp, incoming fire began to rain in. Lando heard the rear wall of the bay ring as ammunition pocked it. No, it wasn't ammunition, he reminded himself, but creatures hurled by the Yuuzhan Vong, thud bugs, the hard-hitting insect projectiles, and razor bugs, which sliced whatever they hit and came around again to attack whatever they missed. One of his troops took a concentration of thud bugs, several of them hitting the man in the throat. The force of the impacts was enough to shear through. That soldier's body collapsed, and his head clanked to the bay floor, rolling unerringly toward Lando. Lando stopped it with his foot like a player trapping a ball, and looked dispassionately at it. His first casualty of the day. The combat droid's features stared up at him with no more expression than they'd shown a moment ago. The damage didn't look too bad, he decided. This one would be easily repaired. The unhurt 19 droid troops charged down the ramp and into the field, turning to head toward the right flank of the big red building. Their war cry changed from a simple roar to words that Lando didn't understand, but he knew what they meant. He'd arranged for the war cry to be installed in his droid troops. It was in the language of the Yuuzhan Vong, and it meant, "We are machines. We are greater than the Yuuzhan Vong." On the bridge of the record time, the communications officer, a Rodian, his green scaly hide immaculately clean, and the mouth at the tip of his pointed chin puckering, said, "Captain, it's working. They're breaking cover. showing themselves. The captain, a tall human woman with copper-colored hair tucked up under an officer's cap, extracted herself from her chair and stood. This put her head squarely in the smoke accumulating against the bridge's ceiling. She coughed, ducked, and moved to stand over the Rhodian's shoulder. On the screen was a panoramic view collated from the holocams situated on the transport's hull. It showed the ground all around the record time, jungle to port, and open field to starboard. Lando Calrissian's droid troops were off the ramp and charging across the field, firing in a defensive screen all around them. And Yuuzhan Vong warriors were popping up all over the field, emerging from the jungle at a dead run, heading toward them, ignoring the transport, lunging like maddened animals toward the droids that insulted them by words and mere presence. "Transmit this visual to all vehicles and vessels in our engagement zone," the captain said. "Transmit to Mon Mothma that the tactic does work. Then tell—oh, blast!" On the screen, something huge was approaching from the far side of the building with the radiating arms, moving around it. This was a living creature, vaguely reptilian, itself the size of a large building. Its skin was a blue-green, but patches of red and silver Yorick coral grew over its head and along its spine. From the spine grew huge sail-like plates, and plasma cannons protruded by the dozens from the Yorick coral. The captain's voice rose into a commander's bellow. "Get the troops off this ship now! Non-essential personnel, follow the troops off. All weapons come to bear on that target. Fire at will, and vent the smoke here. We've got to breathe to fight." This had to be one of those creatures that had fought in the Dantooine engagement. The captain had an ugly presentiment that record time would not survive to lift off again.